This is a session of an interview with Derek Kendrick on the 9th of July 2008, interviewer Rob Lynn. This session is specifically about the planning content, a planning part of the course in the architecture school. Thanks, Derek.
Right. Let's set the scene. When Professor Jensen was appointed Professor of Architecture, his brief was to set up the School of Architecture and subsequently to set up a course in town planning. And so, 1959, when the faculty was created, it was called the Faculty of Architecture and Town Planning. The School of Architecture course is described elsewhere. I'll now talk about the planning course. Staffing of the School of Architecture and the planning course was always going to be difficult because the university didn't understand the concept of studio work teaching, which in architecture course is essential. Thus, when Jensen came to set up the town planning course, he had to consider the availability of the existing staff because he wasn't going to get any additional staff, and their workloads. And so whilst there was a full-time course of Master of Town Planning established, the first course to be created was the part-time course over 3 years, followed by a thesis. It wasn't just a dissertation, it was a thesis. Whereas other master degrees, with a coursework degree and a dissertation, this was a coursework degree followed by a thesis. And the thesis subsequently became the problem and the big issue. So we have Professor Jensen as a professor of architecture, a dominant teacher teaching architecture in the architecture course, and he's the dominant leader and teacher of town planning in the planning course. But for the planning course, he gets subjects for the planning course taught by the Faculty of Economics, Faculty of Faculty of Science with Professor Boyd from Geology, the Faculty of Law, and other experts around the campus and around the city. Transport engineering was taught by Pak Poy and the like. Now, this is the part-time course. The students in the first cohort were very eminent people in the community, and indeed one of the early graduates, John Roeder, became Judge Roeder and the first judge of the Planning Commission. Another product was Mr. Hutchinson, who became a commissioner, and Ita Buttrose, who became a commissioner as well. So very important people in the community were being created by this course.
Stroma Buttrose,
not the
not the woman's
not
weekly.
The TV, not the, that's right. Forgive me, Stroma. In 1970, the course had been going and so on. In 1970, I was Dean of Faculty, and I had some interesting decisions to take. Should I accept into the town planning course a lady with a degree in French and English? No background even remotely associated with planning or engineering or anything to do with that. So I decided to accept this lady. I won't mention her name, but she's turned out to be a very worthwhile choice, and I was very glad in retrospect that I did decide to accept her. But the most difficult one of all was when a reverend in the Methodist Church wanted to join the course, and whether I would accept a degree of theology as an acceptable background for a degree in the planning course. I did in fact accept this person. His argument was he wanted to study planning so that he could advise his church on the place to locate churches, which is a very reasonable argument, I thought. I don't think Professor Jensen was too pleased when he got back that I'd made this decision, but it's what you do. But the same year, 1970, when Jensen was on study leave, he was in Edinburgh, and in Edinburgh he met a lecturer there by the name of Dr. John Brine, and subsequently, when Jensen got back, he advertised the now vacant position of reader. It had been vacated by Gilbert Herbert, and a South African architect of some merit who had left the school to become the first ever professor of architecture in Tel Aviv in Israel. And so the vacant position was advertised, and Dr. John Brine was appointed the reader in architecture and town planning. John Brine had a background as training as an architect, educating architect in Melbourne. And he also brought the benefit of his wife, Judith Brine, who joined the school as a lecturer in architecture and subsequent senior lecturer. And then she became head of school and dean of faculty before moving on to become professor of architecture at the Canberra School of Architecture. But when Dr. John Brine arrived, for the first time, Jensen had somebody who could now be responsible for running the town planning course. And Dr. John Brine decided that the course which Jensen had accepted and which had been accepted by the British Royal Town Planning Institute as well as the Australian Planning Institute needed to be updated. And so he created an entirely new course which was given a new name. Instead of Master of Town Planning, it was Master of Urban and Regional Planning, and widened the scope of the title. As before, it was offered, it was to be offered as a full-time course and a part-time course, but we didn't have the staff to offer it as a full-time course. And at this stage, we did get one more staff member, Santiago Ortuza, a Chilean, who had done his town planning qualifications at Edinburgh with John Brine, and he became a colleague of John Brine's in that area. The first course, the Master of Town Planning course, ran its 3 years, and students that had passed through the coursework now started their thesis. And by 1967, only one student had completed the thesis component and graduated Master of Town Planning. That was Arnis Sixner.
77?
67. Yes. Course started 63.
Oh, yes, sorry.
Yeah. And 67, Arnis Sixner. The second person to graduate was David Eva, who was an interesting case, because we had to get passed through Senate a special new rule in the degree regulations permitting the university to accept him. Why? Because David Eva didn't have a prior degree. He had a diploma of a planning course from Liverpool that Jensen knew about, and Jensen knew that David Eva's background was such that the only reason he hadn't got his degree was because way back under the rules of the University of Liverpool, he hadn't done a university subject in a foreign language, French or German or Russian or what have you. And that was the only reason his qualification was a diploma and not a degree. So Jensen knew that he was fully qualified to take the course. And David Eber graduated with his MTP degree doing a study of the River Murray. Now, it became something of a problem that the 3 years allowed for undertaking the thesis expired or was about to expire, but all these senior members of the planning community who hadn't got their degree. Mm. And so the University Council, in its wisdom, decided to extend the time, and special pressure was put on these people to be assisted, because Jensen was the only supervisor, and he'd been pulled in all directions, and he couldn't supervise them all properly. I seem to recall that Pak Poy's thesis was to be how to restrict the growth of Adelaide. I don't know whatever came of that, because that hasn't happened historically anywhere. But we now have John Bryan taking over the Master of Town Planning course, thesis graduates, and now putting on a part-time Master of Urban and Regional Planning course with the assistance of Santiago Ortuza. And as was the way of those days, the university saw, and we saw, postgraduate student growth as the way to go. And indeed, the Faculty of Architecture and Town Planning thought that this was the way to go. And having made claims for additional staff, it assumed that the university would also see it that way, and the staff development committee would see it that way, and that if we took on the extra students, we would get the extra staff. Can you believe it that 110 students were enrolled? Only two existing staff, plus Jensen, plus David Eber, who has now come on the staff as the architecture staff, available to teach and to supervise and this Master of Urban Regional Planning course, and to supervise all these master's theses. It's probably inevitable that having not got the additional staff, that by 1975, things are becoming not too good on the part of the postgraduate students. And you put it into context, about 1972, the student's voice in the University of Adelaide mirrored the Parisian riots of students in 67, 68. And 1972, the students sat in the vice-chancellor's office and they raided the council chamber, now known as the Edsel Room, and they made their voices known. And what happens is the university agrees that there shall be students elected to the education committee, there shall be students elected to the council. And in 1978, the postgraduate students in the town planning course, in the MERP course, must have made a complaint to the student representatives at the education committee, and under and any other business item, the students complained to the education committee about the postgraduate students in the Faculty of Architecture not being properly supervised for their work. There's plenty of documentation about that in the faculty minutes, in the Education Committee minutes, and one would think in the Council minutes. What happened in 1975 is that I was due to go on study leave, and in February, Jensen told me that he was going to resign his position due to ill health. I accepted that because I knew I'd witnessed something which had happened a few years earlier, that I knew he had high blood pressure and so on. And at that stage, I didn't know, and I don't know anybody else knew, that the rumblings of the volcano, which was about to explode, was going on. Jensen left the university in July 1975, and immediately thereafter, there was a crisis in the department and a crisis in the faculty. Although it's a one-department faculty, yeah, these are two separate identifiable roles. The crisis in the department was that who was going to be the head of school, or the head of the department, sorry, head of department. Now Jensen had left. So as from the 1st of August, they needed to be a head of department. There was a Gillison group, there was a John Bryan group, and there were the neutrals in between. I was overseas, I wasn't involved. What the department decided to do was to put forward John Hipper as the neutral candidate, and the university appointed him as the head of department. Albert Gillison had been appointed by Jensen as the dean, so that Jensen handed over to somebody he thought was going to be responsible. And Albert Gillison had planning qualifications, and he thought better of it. I don't think that Jensen was entirely happy with his choice of reader, and that's why he chose Gillison. Yeah. Now, when I come back from study leave in 1976, I immediately get a call from Vice Chancellor Barnes, Deputy Vice Chancellor Barnes. Look, we've just come back from a trip to Malaysia, to Penang. We've been to Georgetown, the University of Science, Malaysia, and they've got a problem with their building science building. You've got to go immediately. Come back from study leave. No, you've got to go now. Yeah, but no, now. And when you're over there, you can buy me this musical instrument from duty free on the way back. Rick Barnes was interested in music, and he wanted this latest box of tricks. So I went to Penang for 2 weeks to sort out their problem. If I'm just having an aside for a moment on this problem. The problem was that the head of the School of Architecture was an American with a degree in surveying. Knew nothing about architecture. But he'd had drawings done by himself for a building science laboratory, which was a two-story building. And the drawings had been approved, and this building was to be erected. The building had gone to tender, and the lowest tender that had been accepted by the treasurer was that submitted by the treasurer's brother, who was a builder. The treasurer's brother was a builder in traditional Malaysian styles, kampong building. And so what it said on the drawings was being ignored, and instead of having nice rectangular columns of timber, when I got there, there were tree trunks. Honestly, round tree trunks with the bark removed, and these were in place. And that was the problem that the
professor of architecture with a degree in surveying, had spoken to Vic Barnes about, and Vic Barnes, I said, I'll get our building science fellow to come and sort out the problem for you. So when I arrived, this was what I met. But as the fortnight went on, it got even worse, because as it was two stories, they had cut out notches in the tree trunks for the horizontal members, and then they had fitted them and concreted them in at the bottom with welded base plates and bolts, but they drilled the holes the wrong way, and so the notch, instead of being on the outside, was now on the inside, and so they'd extended they'd cut out another notch. And so the column had now weakened to only a quarter of the timber. And I'm wondering, how on earth do I deal with this? You could see the politics of the situation. It was going to blow up in your face. On the Saturday morning, I'd given instructions, but on the Saturday morning, I got up early because I was flying out about midday. Got up and went there about 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock in the morning. And I found that instead of doing as I'd said, they'd actually started concreting in the center columns, which are going up more for the pointy roof. And because I was suspicious, I got a stick and I started to move away the wet concrete. And had a flaming row with the labourers. Couldn't speak a word of English. Stop that, stop that. Bugger off. Stop that. And I scrape away, and I find out that underneath the concrete, the base of these columns are not, in fact, properly fitted with into the welded plates, and the bolts are not going through. In fact, the bolts were not bolted.
So what the hell do you do in a situation like this? And then he had about an hour and a half before I was going to leave the town and catch the plane into Quail and back home. So I called an emergency meeting of everybody that I could, including a little Filipino lecturer in structural engineering. And I thought, the only way that I've got is to try and treat it the Asian way. What's the Asian way? Well, the Asian way is nobody must lose face. So how was I going to create a situation where everybody would do what they had to do and nobody would lose face? So I started off by telling them that about 3 or 4 years from now, I'm a prophet, by the way, there's a newspaper, the Georgetown News, the Georgetown Times, and the headline on the page of the Georgian Times says, Building Science Laboratory Falls Down. That is what I can see in the future. Now, the reputation of this university, particularly as it's a building science building that's fallen down, is damaged forever. We cannot allow such a thing to happen. Now, I'm putting this building, which is completely defective, in the hands of this structural engineer for him to guide you and what must be done, A, to pull it down, and B, to build it properly, so we don't get that newspaper thing. And we saved the face of the university. We must all pull together. I'm going to catch my plane now. Goodbye. That's how I dealt with the situation. I don't know what happened. Nobody ever told me, but it was a complete disaster. Anyway, back into Adelaide and faculty meeting in February. And because I'm new, I asked the Dean, Albert Gillison,
well, this report about the Education Committee and this complaint by the students about the MERP course and the MTP course and so on, what has the faculty done about it? Oh, well, the faculty prepared a report. Well, what did the faculty say it wanted to do about it? Ah, well, it's been taken out of our hands. By whom? By the University Council. The University Council has established a committee to look into the whole matter. And who's on that council committee? And I can't remember who was on it, but other than Hugh Stretton.
Mm.
And I got a lot of respect for Hugh Stretton, because he's one of the most clued up university staff members I've ever known.
Mm.
Wonderful man. Anyway, I said, well, what has the faculty done about dealing with the problem? Well, nothing really. So I said, well, you should have done something. But we can't do anything now because it's in the hands of the University Council. So the faculty did nothing, effectively, about handling its own problem, or calling not John Bryan entirely to explain. But what then unfolded was rather awful. John Bryan, in his efficiency approach for dealing with things, had created a form to be completed by external examiners of theses and dissertations or what have you. And most of the theses, if not all of the theses, went to a Professor Ledgar in the University of Melbourne, with whom John Bryan had a good relationship. I think it was Ledgar, I'm not sure. I don't want to malign the man.
Mm.
But within a week, sometimes, of a thesis being posted off, it was back. And all this form had was ticks. It was as if the thesis arrived and the form was ticked off and posted back. And I'm not sure at the moment whether it was a... I think it was a dissertation, not a thesis now at this mm-hmm. stage, because it was realised that you can't have a three-year coursework degree and a three-year thesis for one degree.
Mm.
And there was a suspicion that the dissertation submissions were not being rigorously academically examined.
Mm.
And it was that stuck in the craw of the university committee. And they decided that the Faculty of Architecture and Planning was not fit to be responsible in running such a course. And at the end of 1976, Albert Gillison stepped down. I became Dean of the Faculty, and it was my job to dismantle the School of Architecture course in planning
mm.
with the help of the Registrar Gerald Stevenson, who was wonderful. And it's a job that I disliked because you're pulling something apart that was important to be built,
mm.
all because there weren't sufficient staff. The department had been let down in not getting the staff. They'd tried to work out a system of handling the pressure. 110 students,
mm.
postgraduate students, for goodness sake. Now, it was a complete disaster.
Mm.
And it seems that quite often during my life in the University of Adelaide, I have this job of Atlas has to go around with the bucket and spade brushing up the manure.
Mm-hmm.
In that time, I'm just going to diverge for a moment, in that time period, I think the university spawned many wonderful babies and then killed them off because it didn't follow through with what was required for them. The one that, in addition to the planning course, which we lost, the library, they put forward a degree for a Master of Librarianship. The first course in Britain, in Australia, a Master of, and I thought, what a wonderful idea that this university could offer a Master of Librarianship with the skills of the Bath Smith Library staff, the facilities of the Bath Smith Library, absolutely wonderful. And they gave it birth, and then they didn't fund it. Another wonderful idea that was lost. But just to go back to finish off, by the end of the 1970s, the planning course was completely removed. No students remained. But by now, of course, David Sanders had arrived. And because we didn't have a town planning course, we talked it through, David Sardis and I, that whilst the Institute of Technology, SAIT, had benefited, now everybody that wanted a planning degree would have to go to their course, the University of Adelaide didn't want to lose a foot in the postgraduate camp, so to speak. And so the faculty's name was changed to the Faculty of Architecture and Urban Design, or the word urban design what was David Sanders' idea of retaining a foot in that planning camp, so to speak. And interestingly enough, but into year 2008, late last year, the University of Adelaide approved the School of Architecture and Landscape Architecture putting on a course of Master of Planning, brackets, by research. And I think it's another, I forget what the titles are, but we have back in the field of planning some 30 odd years later. So it's an interesting cycle.
It is, Terry.